This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, Supreme Court Judge Scalia calls those who want to update the Constitution idiots, and the vice president speaks out. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., economist and author Julianne Malveaux. She's president and CEO of Last Word Productions. In our Chicago bureau, Roland Martin, executive editor of the Chicago Defender, and joining us from our New York bureau, Robert George, editorial writer for the New York Post. All right, folks, we heard finally from the vice president, Robert George. He called it the worst day of his life. Many people were concerned about how the news got out. Britt Hume, a journalist from Fox News, talked with the president. Here's what the vice president had to say about how they released the news.
She wanted to go to the Corpus Christi Caller Times, which is a local newspaper, covers that area, to a reporter she knew. And I thought that made good sense because you can get as accurate a story as possible from somebody who knew and understood hunting. And then it would immediately go up to the wires and be posted on the website, which is the way it went out. And I thought that was the right call.
What do you think now?
Well, I still do. I still think.
She being the owner of the ranch, and we know the scenario that spelled itself out. Many people, Robert, suggested that that was the wrong thing, the worst thing for this White House and this vice president to do. Now that you've heard from him, does it change the story? Does it stop here?
I think it most likely stops here to the extent that we've seen the vice president. He's made his explanation, so people can't quite say that he's ducking reporters and ducking the media and so forth. However, I mean, I think his explanation doesn't really fly. Primarily, I mean, I don't think if he had made the same statement, if he had asked Ann Armstrong to talk to the Corpus Christi Gazette or whatever it is.
Co-owner of the ranch. Go ahead.
Right. If he had said, talk to this person Saturday night, like within 2 or 3 hours after the incident, I mean, I think that explanation might have worked. But the big problem was, I mean, it's the idea. It's not just the fact that he only talked to the local paper. It's the fact that he waited 14 hours to do it. And I think people have a right to be concerned about that.
Roland Martin, people like to see folks be contrite in situations like this. It's fair to say that the vice president was that.
Well, sure, you could say he was contrite in terms of the shooting, but this guy has complete arrogance and disregard for the media and the public in general. He prefers to be quiet, not say anything, blow folks off, and that's what it was all about. And for him to sit here and suggest that it's okay to say, well, she called the Corpus Christi Caller Times, everything was fine. You're the vice president of the United States. They're number two man in our government. That's silly. And so he could have lessened the pain of Scott McClellan, who has been beat up every single day. But he chose to be quiet for 3 days, and he chose to go have a very soft landing in the wonderful cradling arms of Fox News.
Julianne Malveaux, is that, and I suspect this is a loaded question for you to a degree, but was it bothersome to you that he went to Fox News? Many people assume that Fox News is in the pocket of Republicans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he clearly cherry-picked for the most sympathetic interviewer he could get, with no disrespect at all to Britt Hume. It just seemed that they looked for someone where they could control the spin. Having waited so long, I mean, I think that going to Fox News on Sunday or Monday might have been okay. But having waited so long, I think this deserved a press conference. I think the vice president should have shown up before the, you know, White House media and taken it the hard way. I mean, if this truly is simply an innocent incident, and I ain't going hunting with Dick Cheney anytime soon. But if it's an innocent incident, why not come clean? Why hold it to yourself for so much time? It raises so many questions. It's part of the pattern of this administration of ducking when you can.
I'm going to partially agree with Julianne there. I mean, I think I know. Hey, you know, stop the presses here. For what it's worth, I'm not going hunting with Dick Cheney either. But what I was going to agree with was, and by the way, in full disclosure, Fox News is a sister company of the New York Post. But I think Julianne is right. Going to the friendly audience on Sunday night or Monday morning, whatever, I think would have made a little bit more sense. I mean, he could have easily have gone to a, you know, a, pardon the expression, a straight shooter, a regular member of the media like, you know, Charlie Gibson of ABC or something like that, somebody who even Republicans are not going to perceive as having some kind of axe to grind. And I think it's
so let's be fair to Britt Hume, and Julianne did mention this. I mean, he's been in the business a long time. He's worked with many networks. And even though many say that he's shown a right bent since being at Fox, he'd ask all the right questions.
Well, he was a good interview. But even though it was a good interview, I think that the point is the time. Britt Hume, I mean, he could have gone to Suzanne Malveau, my cousin at CNN, for that matter. But after 5 days, you know, 4 days, you really should, you know, basically should do a press conference and let everybody get a whack at you. These questions have been raised since this happened.
Unfortunately, he's not. I think the problem he's perceiving is he's not going to do a full press conference, because then it's not going to be focused just on this. Everybody's going to want to start talking about Libby and all these other kinds of issues. And I think he just wanted a general focused issue on this topic.
And he could have said, I'm not going to answer questions about Libby.
But the reality is he did fail the basic test of crisis management. He chose to only go to Fox News. But understand, I mean, people always seek sympathetic audiences. And, Ed, I mean, you know, in the wake of O.J. Simpson's case, I mean, he came talk to BET. O.J. wasn't talking to BET prior to being on trial. And so people do talk to sympathetic audiences. But I will say this. I am pleased, though, that Dick Cheney has indeed allowed one of my favorite songs, Shotgun by Junior Walker and the All-Stars, to get increased sales as a result of this incident.
Let's turn our attention now from the sublime to the ridiculous, some would say. We heard from Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, who suggested that those who want to see changes in the Constitution, see it as a living, breathing document, if you will, are idiots, in his words. He also suggested that it should be seen as it was and interpreted as it was originally written and intended. No room for change there. And he also suggested during this speech that there is no room as a Supreme Court justice to allow your personal feelings to enter in when deciding cases. Now, Julianne Malveau, we heard from William Rehnquist in a tape after his death that he allowed to be released after the fact, that he said that's impossible. You are always going to have the baggage that you bring to the table. You just work very hard to cast it aside if you can.
Absolutely. First of all, this is judicial temperament that a Supreme Court justice is running around calling people idiots. I got to say back at you, Mr. Scalia, because this is really inappropriate. Although he was talking to the Federalist Society, and it's an easy place to bash liberals or bash people who are not strict constructionists as he is. Again, I just think it's inappropriate. The Constitution included language that called black folks 3/5 of people. So should we stick with that? I mean, this makes no sense to me at all. In fact, there's so many advances in technology and other things that this Supreme Court has to deal with that the founding fathers could not have possibly been able to interpret. So, yes, you have to do some interpretation. It is a living document. And even more than that, as Chief Justice Rehnquist said, people, this is why we look for diversity on the court, because people's experiences do filter through. We've got 5 Catholic justices. This is a problem. You know, where are the voices of people of color? Where are the voices? I mean, let me not go there. But there are just a whole lot of things that I think that he's ignoring when he talks about strict construction. And I think that what we've seen in pivotal cases such as Brown, that people have had to use not only their something of their personal views, but also the notion of changing with the times.
There really is no job out there where, as Julianne said, you can just simply divorce your personal experiences. Sandra Day O'Connor often talked about the value of Thurgood Marshall and what he brought to the table. When they were having discussions about race and discussions about voting rights and discussions about the death penalty, while other folks were having a theoretical legal conversation, Thurgood Marshall brought it to light because he said, this is what I experienced, this is what I saw with my own eyes. And so that does come to play. I mean, Antonin Scalia is the one who's an idiot, because what it says is that here's a guy who is so smart in the books that he has no smarts when it comes to common sense and life.
Well, I mean, Scalia has basically demonstrated that he's sort of the linguistic bomb thrower on the court. I think that goes without saying. I think, however, he is incorrect in saying that you can't divorce, you know, your background, your personal experiences, and so forth when you come there. However, I think though he is correct in the saying that you should be applying the law, a specific constitutional philosophy of basically trying to look at the Constitution as explicitly as possible in terms of the words.
But even that, Robert, is seen through your prism.
It's shaped by all the experience that you have had or have not had. But the key, I think, the key is what he would argue is that you can get to some certain decisions that, say, a quote liberal would accept, but you have to go through it in a certain pathway. You cannot, in a sense, put law in there which isn't there, such as, for example, I mean, Roe v. Wade, obviously being the most obvious example. And the thing is here, keep in mind that Scalia is clearly a conservative, but he has in the past he was on the side of those who said the Constitution does not does permit flag burning.
Yeah, it's even hard for me to get that out, Robert. Try to align him with that, but okay.
I get your point.
Yeah, I get your point. Let me see before we run out of time if we can move to something that's important. We've been watching it over the course of the last X number of months because it doesn't seem as though we're ever going to end this election, and that's Haiti. An investigation has found burned ballots, many cast for former President René Préval, that were found in a smoldering state dump. So there is concern that there has been yet tampering again in this ill-fated election. And Julianne Malveau, when you take a look at this, no matter who wins, the real issue for Haiti, in my opinion, is not necessarily who runs the country. While that is important, It is the state the country is in terms of just the sure economic devastation that whoever wins will have to take over.
Well, that's the biggest issue. 80% of the population in Haiti is poor, relying extensively on foreign aid, foreign investment that hasn't happened. When Aristide was president in 2003, most of the international agencies froze loan agreements. The World Bank refused to engage with Haiti until they paid back arrears, which is ridiculous. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous in terms of the double standards that we have towards this particular country. So, Préval, I believe, has now been named president in some kind of deal between the burn ballots and the blank ballots. But as you say, he had a term, a four-year term, and he was the only Haitian president to hand off the country peacefully. But in his term, he was able to do so little because his hands were tied. The structural issue is the tension between the elite and the poor, and then the issue of how you attract development to a country that has been so phenomenally unstable that literally the agricultural underpinnings in the ecosystem have been disrupted because of the poverty.
Yeah, Roland Martin, does it bother you at all that the United States has essentially turned its back on Haiti?
It certainly bothers me because, I mean, that is in our hemisphere. And so for us to talk about democracy, that's the critical issue there. You know, we always love to talk about democracy and democracy and democracy. Here is a country where, I mean, you have a democracy, but we really didn't necessarily believe that when Aristide was there. And we talk about, and so that really is what jumps out at me. But I have to say this when it comes to their election and the burning of ballots. I mean, we've had many instances in this country when ballots mysteriously turned up or mysteriously left. I mean, LBJ became a U.S. senator from Texas because of a mysterious box of ballots being found in one of the far-reaching counties in Texas. And so it's not as if anytime you have humans involved in an election, you have the possibility of this taking place.
And certainly won't talk about the history of the fine windy city that you sit in.
Absolutely.
Being lost.
You know,
go ahead, Robert. And Robert, pick up on this point, if you will. There was a true love affair with Haiti and Aristide in the beginning of his term.
Mm-hmm. There was. That's exactly right. There was at the beginning, and then he. Obviously, there's going to be arguments as to whether a lot of the rebellion was ginned up from the outside and so forth. But I mean, I think even some of his strongest supporters and allies, of which Preval at one point was, many of them, I think, just legitimately fell out of favor because they felt that he had sort of gotten caught up in some of the corrupt practices that are going on there. I mean, I've got a friend over there who's teaching, and he was guardedly optimistic when he saw like the strong turnout for the vote over the last week or so. So I'm hopeful that Preval will be able to succeed, and specifically that our administration, the United States, recognizing that Haiti is on its doorstep, and obviously the Haitian immigration has expanded so much over the last several decades, that we recognize that it's a unique relationship, and if Haiti fails, I mean it should appropriately enough be an embarrassment to this administration that has put so much pressure on democracy.
The concern is whether or not people are going to sit still for the idea that if you found these burned ballots, how many ballots could have been discarded that we don't know about?
I think that, as Roland says, there are going to be irregularities, especially when people are involved, and especially where the stakes are so high. It fascinates me that one of the candidates of the elite has talked about playing by the rules when they have not played by the rules at all at any time. But, Ed, when we look at the point Roland made earlier about Haiti being in our hemisphere, and we look at the many, many billions hidden on trillions of dollars we're getting ready to deal with in Iraq to stabilize it, that begs the question of what we could do to stabilize an economy and a people literally right here. The continued destabilization of Haiti has phenomenal impacts on the United States in terms of immigration. And so, ballot problems notwithstanding, basically Preval seems to have, by whatever permutation, won this thing or at least been the front runner. And if this deal holds that he's to be the president between the burned and the missing ballots, then I think what we have to do is support him. He is basically the candidate of the poor, and he, as a previous successful president, probably brings more to the table in terms of
stabilization. It would be nice if Condoleezza Rice goes over there soon, by the way.
Yeah, right.
It would be very nice.
We'll continue to watch that situation. Julianne Malveaux, Roland Martin, Robert George, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.